Did you know that August is the National Breastfeeding Month? I didn't, but then again, I have never breastfed in my life. On the other hand, I have two kids who were breastfed, and when you're an attachment theory fanboy as I am, plus a parenting enthusiast, breastfeeding is a subject matter you have to think about. However, this is not an episode about breastfeeding. It is an episode that goes into one of the parenting methods that put breastfeeding on its forefront. And it's called attachment parenting. So, in today's episode, what is attachment parenting and why I don't like it? Stick around. You're listening to the Apparently Parent podcast, where we combine the art of parenting with the science of psychology. I'm Eran Katz, and for over 10 years as a clinical psychologist, I've been helping people from age 6 to 86 live a happier, more flexible life. In the process, I have learned about the things parents do to make or break a childhood, and what turns children into happy, confident human beings. This podcast is for you, the 21st century parent who believes that better parenting can make a better world. So if that's you, and you're ready to elevate your parenting journey, let's go! I'm your host, Eran Katz. Alright, my friends, welcome to episode number 60. What a nice round number it is, and what an insignificant fact that was. In today's episode, I'm going to go deep into a subject matter that I have waited quite some time to go deep into because it is of much interest and I think it's an important one, and it is all about attachment parenting. Now, I want to start with a little story. A couple of years ago, I had a client in my private practice. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a clinical psychologist. I have a private practice where I work with adults, children, and sometimes parents who come to talk and get some help around their parenting. And this mom, she had two kids. One of them was 4 years old, the other one was around two. And she had some trouble, the older one, regarding his behavior. And she wanted to have some help with that. But when I asked her about her relationship with his younger sister, she actually, out of the blue, started to cry, which kind of surprised her. And when we delved into what happened there, she told me that she felt like she's a very bad mom to both of them, but especially to the little girl who was at then a little bit younger than 2 years old. And when I wondered why, because nothing in her behavior or the way she talked about her days with her children and all that, nothing triggered me or put a red flag that made me think, wow, she's doing a bad job. But she told me about how she is reading about parenting methods, and she's always going into Facebook groups and asks questions and reads stuff and reads ideas of other people in different Facebook threads, and she always feels like she's not doing a good job raising her children, especially her daughter, because she didn't breastfeed her children. Now, it's not like she didn't want to breastfeed them, she couldn't. It was too painful for her. She tried a lot, she had counseling, she did what she had to do, but then she realized that it's better for her. And I wonder, why does it seem so painful for her? And why would it make her think like she's a bad mom? Because on all accounts, her kids are doing quite a good job, you know. Yeah, her older one had some behavior issues, but he was 4 years old, and it was mostly her and her husband that needed to adjust and know how to approach him. But I wonder what made her feel so bad about herself. And then we went into that even a little bit deeper, and she told me that they tried to sleep with little babies in the bed, but it didn't work for them. And she started to tell me about how she had to hold her babies all the time on a sling or on her hands and breastfeed them for long periods, but she couldn't, and how she had to sleep with the baby in bed and not put them in a different cot or a different room. And everything around that was very rigid, and it perplexed me. Where do you get this rigidity from? And that's when she told me about this method that is called attachment parenting. Now, I'm a clinical psychologist. I deal with attachment theory both in my research and my practice. I use attachment-based therapy practices. But when she told me about attachment parenting, which is a term that I did hear about every now and then, I started to realize that there's something wrong here. The things she told me that mattered weren't things that mattered when you look at things from a real attachment perspective. So that's when I started to go into Facebook groups and read the stuff that she was reading and a little bit about the books and stuff like that. And I realized that something here is askew. There's a very nice idea about attachment and parenting, and it can go to wrong places, at least wrong on my accounts. It took me some time to build up this episode, but I wanted to take the time to reread some of the stuff and reacquaint myself with all that and see how should we tackle the issue of attachment parenting, because I believe that attachment parenting is not related really to attachment theory. And as I've said, I'm an attachment theory fanboy, and it angers me that a parenting method takes a name and uses it in order to make itself look better, while its advice is not really what attachment theory suggests. So I wanted to make this episode first explaining what attachment parenting is, and then go into my criticism about attachment parenting. But I want to start with a word of caution. If you listen to this episode and you practice attachment parenting, or what you think is attachment parenting, I want you to know that I am not going to attack you in any way. I have no wish to shame, guilt, or blame you for any choice that you make. And I say that because sometimes in social media threads, you can get a sense that things are very polarized, like there's only black and white. Like if you don't practice this, you're a bad guy. Or if you do practice this, you're a bad guy. Now, there are some issues that I think there should be a very red line. So when we think about corporal punishment, for example, about hitting kids as a manner of discipline, there's a very straight, clear red line here that I think no one should ever cross. I would question, why do you do that? How did you learn it? And I would tell you that you're doing a wrong thing. When it comes to attachment parenting, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong, but I do want to put some light into the doctrine and why I think it's wrong in some places. Okay, so I don't want to say that attachment parenting is bad. I don't want to say that attachment parenting is wrong. I want to say that attachment parenting takes good ideas, good suggestions, good advice, good principles, and kinds of twists them around and takes everything to a place that can hurt parents. So let's go into this, and we have to start with asking and talking about what is attachment parenting. Now, in order to really understand what attachment parenting is and how it became so influential, we gotta understand where it came from. So here's a little history, very basic history lesson about parenting methods, where they come from, and how attachment parenting came to be. So, you know, for many, many years, most of history, in fact, parenting was just something people did without really thinking about it. You know, they got together, they did what they did, they had kids, and then they kind of raised the kids until at least the kids were old enough to take care of themselves. And for many years, raising kids meant you had just had to keep them alive until they were old enough and stable enough to work and sustain themselves. Now, in many cultures, the biological parents weren't necessarily those who actually raised the children. You know, for example, many cultures had wet nurses, women whose job was to nurse other parents' babies, or full-time nannies. Kids were being sent to be apprentices at a young age, so they were de facto raised by another person who also raised them, but also taught them a profession, etc. And it was only like, I think, 200 years ago that the granular family that we think of today really came to be. And if you want to learn more about that history, there are a couple of books. I will put one of them in the show notes of this episode. You can go to apparentlyparent.com/60 to learn more about that book. It's a book called Parenting for a Peaceful World, and it starts with like summary of the history of parenting and actually going into the dark places of parenting, but that's not the issue of this episode. Anyway, with time, more and more focus was put on the granular family of a mom, a dad, and a child. But still, for many years, the child was still seen as kind of a means to an end, or something to, you know, you have to deal with while trying to work or socialize. There was a little emphasis on the actual experience of being a child, of what childhood means and what are the special needs of children and all that. Now, the 20th century brought with it so many changes to the human culture and in human life, and one of which is the understanding of children, and it came actually with the rise of the psychological field, of which I am part of professionally, mainly through the work of psychoanalysts such as Sigmund Freud and his students. A better understanding of the concept of childhood was really starting to grow, and while we don't really look at children today as they looked at children 100 or 100 something years ago when psychoanalysis started to grow, we did develop a better understanding of the concept of childhood as the 20th century moved forward. And with that, we started to understand how unique and important this period in the human lifespan is. And also, we started to realize what are the negative consequences of parenting. So when parenting is cold or harsh, we started to realize that it causes a lot of problems, both for the child and also for the adult that this child is going to become. Now, in the second half of the 20th century, different parenting methods and philosophies started to emerge, and many of them were focused on soft, responsive attention towards the child, and those methods were largely opposed to a more classical way to raise children that was prevalent at the time, and that way focused on less contact with the child, being more strict, not showing a lot of love, being more like rule-based, expectation-based kind of parenting. Now, one of the most famous example of a parenting method or parenting book was the famous or sometimes infamous book by Dr. Spock. It was called Baby and Child Care. It was published around the 50s, if I'm not mistaken. But later, in later decades, more and more parenting methods and literature started to emerge. And in 1975, a very famous book called Continuum Concept was published. It was written by Jean Liloff, and it's actually quite influential to this day. Incidentally, I found a copy of it in the closet of my parents' house, although I don't think they used it when I was a child. And it did became one of the most influential parenting books that I've ever heard of. Now, in the meanwhile, in the 20th century, while psychoanalysis and psychology grew into a very profound science or profession, one of the most influential areas of this new science of psychology was attachment theory, aka My Baby. And attachment theory is the love child of the work of two prominent psychologists, one of them John Bowlby from the United Kingdom and the other Mary Ainsworth from the United States. And sometimes Mary Ainsworth is called John Bowlby's student, but she wasn't, she was his colleague, and they both birthed together this attachment theory and research. And their work focused on learning, understanding, and explaining what it means to be a child and what it means to be a caregiver for a child. Now, John Bowlby was a psychoanalyst, and he moved from the rigidity of psychoanalysis of his time that really tended to focus on the child's inner fantasies, with little regard to what really happens to the child and his or her parents, so what happens in his external world, the dynamics between him and his parents. And John Bowlby created a simple yet profound theory to explain how the early relationships between a baby and his caregivers gets coded into the child's personality and how it affects his life. And John Bowlby actually said that this theory explains how the child is affected from the cradle to the grave. So long after the relationship, the early relationship between the baby and the parent is ended, because the baby is no longer a baby, but now he's a child, he's still affected. And even long after the parents are not, you know, there anymore, you're still affected by your relationship with them as an adult. So that was one of the premises of the attachment theory by John Bowlby, which it really put a lot of emphasis, especially on the first year of the baby's life. And Mary Ainsworth, she took his theoretical ideas, because John Bowlby based his theory on things he saw in his clinical work, but Mary Ainsworth took his ideas and put them to the test. She actually didn't really think he was right, but she put him to the test, and she saw he was. And she did this first by going to Uganda, and where she studied mothers and babies, by watching them and being part of their culture. And then she went back to the States and she created a groundbreaking psychological testing paradigm known as the strange situation. I won't go into that now, but that led to countless studies that to this day help us understand the ways children come to be and who they are in the world. Now, I have to say that attachment theory, in my opinion, and in that of many others, is the best theory to guide us when we want to do a good job as parents. And it's highly researched and leads to practical ideas and things to do as parents. And it's always changing and evolving. The way attachment theory was taught and understood 20 years ago when I started my studies into psychology, it's not really the same as it is taught today. And that's important to remember, because as you're going to see in attachment parenting, things are not really changing the way they maybe should be. But because attachment theory is such a robust and it has a good name, I guess that's one of the reasons why William Sears, who was the originator of the method known as attachment parenting, chose to use the attachment name for his method. Now, let us go into attachment parenting and understand where it really came from. And as I mentioned, William Sears, he developed it with his wife Martha Sears. And William is a pediatrician, and sometimes he calls himself to this day America's pediatrician, and his wife Martha is a nurse. So they have a lot of experience with babies and children, and that's something to remember. And together they wrote a couple of parenting books, such as The Complete Book of Christian Parenting and Child Care, and a book called Creative Parenting and The Baby Book. And initially, Sears based his ideas on the Continuum Principle. You remember the book published in 1975. And actually, he originally referred to his method as the new Continuum concept, or immersion mothering. Note mothering and not parenting. Although, however, he did started to use the term attachment parenting, and you know, you wonder why. And Martha Sears, in an interview, said that they decided to latch on the attachment wagon for publicity reasons. So she says, quote, "I realized we needed to change the term to something more positive, so we came up with attachment parenting. Since the attachment theory literature was so well researched and documented by John Bowlby and others." End quote. Which for me is quite telling, and makes you think about how people think more on the publicity of their ideas instead of the validity of their ideas. But let's move on. So, history lesson aside, that is checked. Now, let's talk about what attachment parenting means. So, basically, attachment parenting is a method that is supposed to help you, quote, "put your mind and heart to the individual needs of your baby and letting your knowledge of your child be your guide to making on-the-spot decisions about what works best for both of you," end quote. That's a quote from the attachment parenting book by the Sears. It was published, I think, originally in 2011, like 10 years ago. And I think that's the most recent book that is really about attachment parenting written by the Sears. Now, this feature, letting your knowledge of the child be your guide, is actually an important and fundamental feature of the method, and one that makes a lot of sense. They call it baby reading, and it means that the mother is supposed to learn how to read her baby's cues and signals and let that understanding lead her way. Now, if you raised an eyebrow for the use of mother instead of parent, there's a reason for that, as most of the writing is geared towards the mothers. Remember, Sears wanted to call his method immersive mothering, not immersive parenting. That's actually true, at least for the earlier work. It seems that later on they kind of shifted to looking at both parents, at least linguistically, as I'll explain later when we talk about how attachment parenting can be kind of patriarchal. Okay, so far we understand that parents are supposed to understand their babies, learn to recognize their signals and respond to them, which actually sounds like what a good parent should do. This is really a hallmark of attachment theory, as proposed by both Bowlby and Ainsworth, as well as later researchers in the field. However, the main teaching of attachment parenting comes in the form of the 7 baby B's. These are 7 principles that guide the method, and you can see them pop up in almost every attachment parenting inspired group on Facebook or on blogs, etc. So this is the main doctrine of the attachment parenting method. And the 7 baby B's, as far as I understand, were actually 5 at first, and the last 2 were added later. So in the rest of this episode, I'm going to go over the 7 baby B's so you'll understand what they mean. Now, by all means, this is not an exhaustive discussion of all they have to say. And if you want to learn more, you can really pick up their books, at least the attachment parenting book, which is the latest one. It's an easy read, and you can learn a lot about the method from that. I will quote from that book during the episode. But remember, this is not a podcast about attachment parenting. This is not an episode that goes deep into the method. All right. So let's go through the 7 baby B's, and it starts with birth bonding. According to Sears, there is a time slot right after the birth where the child is in a quote-unquote quiet and alert state, which is prone for bonding between baby and mother. For that reason, he suggests women refrain from using analgesics during the childbirth, such as, you know, epidural shots, because, as he says, those drugs not only affect the mother, but also the child. In the book, they say, quote, "The hours and days after birth are a sensitive period when mothers are uniquely primed to care for their newborns. Spending lots of time together after birth and beyond allows the natural attachment-promoting behaviors of the infant and the intuitive biological caregiving qualities of the mother to come together." End quote. That's from the attachment parenting book. And they also say later that, quote, "Dads can also enjoy birth bonding. While they don't share the physical experience of birth and breastfeeding, in the days and weeks after birth, they can tune in emotionally to their fascinating newborn," end quote, again from the attachment parenting book. Now, basically what it means that there are 2 advices here. One is not to use analgesics during the childbirth because, for at least according to the Sears, it can hurt the bonding. Now, I don't know that to be true. And the other suggestion is what is known today as rooming in. So there are a couple of things here. One is there's a suggestion that we followed with our second child to put the baby immediately on the mother right after she gave birth and let her nurse. And then also let the baby sleep with the mother or the parents in the same room and be with the mother all the time instead of the nursery and all that. So that's all in an effort to promote the bonding, the early bonding between parent and child. Now, the second baby, B, is breastfeeding. As I've said, August is the breastfeeding national month, And basically the series are building on the notion that breastfeeding enhances the mother and child attachment due to the release of oxytocin, which is also called the love hormone, which is also a concept that is butchered in the media. And they suggest the following. You should breastfeed frequently, like 8 to 12 times a day for newborns. You should focus on nighttime breastfeeding, like from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. And you should only breastfeed for the first 6 months due to food allergies. And that includes not using formula, according to the series, according to what I read online and in the book. And while breastfeeding is truly a way to enhance the mother-child attachment due to the close proximity, because she holds the child really close to her, and the need to be sensitive to the baby's cues. Now, I don't want to go into the question, is this advice right or wrong? Because I don't know. I'm not a pediatrician. I don't have any proficiency or professional knowledge about the right way to breastfeed. I do think that you don't have to breastfeed, but this is not the issue that I'm going into. Just wanted to present that as the second baby B, and the third one is baby wearing. Now, Sears suggests that mothers wear their infants around their body, meaning they hold them close to the body all the time, or at least most of the time, using something like a baby sling, or there are different kinds of slings and, you know, appliances that you can put the baby in. And the reason for this suggestion is that, according to Sears, this makes the child happier and allows the mom to engage in whatever she wants to do while still keeping a close eye on the child. And he also claims that baby wearing trains the child's sense of balance as well as his language acquisition, because he always experiences the mom talking. Now, you might ask, what should a mom do if she goes away from the house to work? And he suggests that in that case, she wears the child for 4 to 5 hours during the night to compensate for the absence of her during the day. And by the way, he also claims that baby wearing should be a practice that continues even after the child grows up. For example, it can help soothe a misbehaving toddler. Not a baby, a toddler. And the fourth baby B is bedding close to baby. Now, in the book, the Attachment Parenting book, they write, quote, "Most, but not all, babies sleep best when they are close to their parents." End quote, and I do like to note that they use parents instead of mothers in this one. Basically, what bedding close to baby means is co-sleeping. They state that when babies are sleeping in the bed of the parents with the parents, they sleep better, that it minimizes nighttime anxiety or separation anxiety, and it can also help nursing mothers to breastfeed during the night. Now, the fifth baby B is belief in the language value of your baby's cry, which means that you should try to understand why your baby is crying, what he or she is communicating. They talk about how babies use their crying as a way to communicate their needs and not to manipulate, which is actually right. Quote, "The more sensitively you respond, the more the baby learns to trust his parents and the ability to communicate." End quote. Which basically means that, you know, don't think that when your baby is crying, he's trying to manipulate you. Try to understand what he's trying to say. Now, the last two baby B's, to my understanding, were added later. And the first one is beware of baby trainers. Now here, the Sears warn from parenting guidance that encourages parents to let the baby cry in order to train him or her to go back to sleep. Quote, "Attachment parenting will give you a sixth sense, so that eventually you'll become so confident about your own style of parenting that you'll be less vulnerable to the advice of baby trainers." End quote. That's again from the Attachment Parenting book. And here the Sears are talking about how many counselors advise that when parents want to teach their children to go to sleep, they advise them to put the baby in his bed, different bed from that of the parents, and when he cries or she cries, because it happens, do not approach the child and let them cry it out, for example, or pick him up and put him down after a couple of minutes. There are different methods here. I'm not going to go into that. They just want attachment parenting followers to beware of those kind of trainers. They say that it hurts the child, and that's the whole point of beware of baby trainers. And which leads me eventually to the seventh baby B, balance. Here they talk about how important it is to balance between attending to the baby's needs and those of the parent or the couple. Quote, "The key to putting balance in your parenting is being appropriately responsive to your baby, knowing when to say yes and when to say no, and having the wisdom to say yes to yourself when you need help." End quote. Now, the last two baby bees, as I've said, were added later, so I guess they kind of got some feedback that the attachment parenting method really puts most of the emphasis on the child, which can lead to imbalance in the parent's life. So they added that, which is nice. That's a good idea to add this suggestion. However, I do think that the previous suggestions quite messed things up. So it's like, oh, whoa, we realized that, you know, all of our suggestions are making moms and maybe dads even like too burned out. So let's add this thing about balance. All right, so in this episode, I have talked about what attachment parenting is, where did it come from, and we took a bird's eye view on the seven baby B's, which are the basic doctrines or principles of attachment parenting. I won't go into why I think attachment parenting is not really a good idea, because it would make this episode too long, and it's already quite long. And you know, you're a parent, you don't have like 90 minutes to listen to one episode right now, okay? So what I'm going to do, I'm going to split this up. So this is part one of the episode about attachment parenting, in which we went into the history from which attachment parenting grew and what attachment parenting basically means. Now, as I've said, this is not an exhaustive discussion of attachment parenting. I didn't go into all the nuances that you might realize about attachment parenting. I just wanted to go into the basic areas of attachment parenting. Now, in the next episode that will be released next Thursday, I'm going to go deeper into what I think about attachment parenting, where I think it's problematic, and where, during the research for this episode, I realized that things are maybe not so bleak as they might seem sometimes. If you want to learn more about attachment parenting, we'll put a couple of links in the show notes for this episode, episode 60, so you can go to apparentlyparent.com/60. I will put some links to the books by the series and their website. And if you have any questions or you have any experiences of your own that you want to share, you're very welcome to contact me. Go to apparentlyparent.com and you will find a contact page on the menu there. You are more than welcome to write to me or to reach out to me on Instagram at apparentlyparent. If you have found any value in this episode, I would be very happy if you would go to Apple Podcasts and find the Apparently Parent podcast and leave a rating and a review, however stars you think are appropriate and whatever you want to write. It really helps me get in front of more listeners, spreading the word of the parenting map, and also it helps me understand what you like and dislike about the podcast, and you know, I can make it better for you guys. This is what I really wish to do. If you haven't subscribed yet to the Apparently Parent podcast, do so on your favorite podcast app so you can get all the new episodes when they come. And I will see you again next week, next Thursday, for the second part of this episode about the attachment parenting method. See you then.